This is the season finale of The Gift of Forgiveness, a podcast filled with inspiring stories from those who've overcome the unforgivable. I'm Katherine Schwarzenegger Pratt. When I started this journey to learn about forgiveness, I honestly didn't know what to expect. As I've mentioned, my curiosity around forgiveness all started several years ago when I found myself really struggling to understand what forgiveness meant to me. That journey, which consisted of talking to pretty much everyone and anyone I possibly could, led me to my book, The Gift of Forgiveness. And that book led me to this podcast. Along the way, I've been lucky enough to talk to so many people and hear tons of inspiring stories about forgiveness. Each story different than the next, and each person's relationship with forgiveness is more different than the one before. All of these stories have been powerful and have changed my understanding of forgiveness. I hope they've gotten you to think about forgiveness and the role that it plays in your life too. Before this season comes to an end, I want to bring you one more interview. Today, I'm talking with Dr. Dan Siegel, who is wise beyond words. He's a clinical psychiatrist and one of my personal favorite forgiveness experts. Years ago, I actually saw Dan as a therapist, and we shared many conversations around forgiveness that left a lasting impact on me. And now, I'm lucky enough to chat with Dr. Dan Siegel as a friend. So we talked, we've been talking a lot about forgiveness and then just from my book and also on this podcast of talking to people about, you know, really their forgiveness experiences, their relationship with forgiveness and struggles with forgiveness, journey with forgiveness in different situations in their life, and also how really complex the topic of forgiveness is and how unique it is to every single one of us. So I think maybe we can just start off by talking about how often the topic of forgiveness really comes up in your practice.
Yeah, you know, the word forgiveness is so interesting because it does come up a lot in therapy of all sorts. I think being mindful is where you become amused at things that used to annoy you, you know, and in a way that's what forgiveness is. It's like you come to take a deep breath and depending on the type of thing you're forgiving and the type of person and the type of experience, it's the idea of how do you actually, you know, see that you can move forward in life being amused, not meaning you're entertained, but meaning you can have a sense of humor, have a sense of perspective. So then how do you live fully present with acceptance? Or, you know, I'm an acronym nut, so I have this acronym COLE, you know, with curiosity, openness, acceptance, and love towards what's happening. And in that sense, forgiveness does not mean that you are, I guess the word would be condoning. That is, you're not saying that what happened was right or that what happened is something, if you had a choice, you may actually choose that it not happen. But it's really seeing that something did happen. Jack Kornfield, when we teach together, he always tells this story, which is so beautiful, you know, which is, you know, he talks about two guys at a bar, one of those kinds of stories. And, you know, one is ragged and really just looks like he's just having the hardest time of life. And the other one's, you know, pretty upbeat and energized and, you know, taking care of himself. And they meet in the bar and the ragged one goes, "You look really familiar. Joe, is that you?" And Joe goes, "Yeah, Bill, is that you?" And Bill goes, "Yeah, yeah." And so Bill says, "Oh my God, we were in the prisoner of war camp, you know, when we were in Vietnam. For all those years, you know, almost 8 years, you and I were both there. And how can you look so good?" And Joe says, "Well, you know, I've really worked hard at it. But Bill, let me ask you something. What are you still thinking about our time in prison?" And Bill goes, "Yes, of course I am." And he starts going on and on. "I will never forgive them. I will never forgive them. Never, never, never. I will never forgive them." And then Bill turns to Joe and says, "I'll bet you've forgiven them." He goes, "Yeah," he goes, "forgiveness is really giving up all hope for a better past." And he goes, Bill, you not forgiving them means they still have you as a prisoner. So it's really empowering to forgive.
What is it like for you as a therapist to be able to witness these breakthrough moments when it comes to forgiveness journeys for people?
You know, the first word, I don't know why, that keeps on coming to mind is just love. Someone comes in and you don't know what's going to happen. And you just, as a therapist, you just try to be as present for the individual as possible, not in any way knowing where the journey together is going to go. And so when things arise, often that have never been spoken before, or they're spoken about in a new kind of way, or memories come up that were never really in consciousness before, or all sorts of stuff, it's this incredible privilege that is just, I don't know, it's filled with love. I mean, it's and incredible gratitude that people over these years that I've been a therapist will come in and have the courage to go on this exploration, you know, together and experience the things that are often unspeakable, the kinds of stuff that happens. And that's why they often weren't in memory. And that's why people are feeling so much suffering. And so to be given the honor of someone saying, you know, I'm hurting and I don't know why, and I think I need some help. And then to be the person, not an expert, really, it's more like a fellow journeyer, you know, because life is hard for everybody. You're both travelers and you just need to learn the art of carrying their luggage for a while, you know, and sometimes that luggage is resentments and you help them hold on to them, and then they can find forgiveness is really freedom. Mm-hmm. And that's just filled with love, you know, and so that's why I've never spoken about that, but that's, I guess, what I would say is like, you're like my therapist, yeah. Catherine.
Thank you.
And maybe you learned that from writing the book. How did that come for you to do the whole journey of writing the book?
Well, I mean, it was really changing the psychology for me of when you go through life, I had very different views of forgiveness. And then after talking to so many people and realizing that it's actually has nothing necessarily to do with another person and it's all about you, and looking at it as a really empowering action and a gift that you give yourself, that was like a really big shift for me in my mind, and I think helps a lot of people. And so it was interesting for me to interview people and see their different ways of going through their forgiveness journey, whether it's, you know, writing a letter to somebody or calling someone up, emailing someone. And then some people who, you know, chose to never have that sort of interaction with the person again, because they realize that it actually has nothing to do with them and everything to do with themselves and setting themselves free from living in this pain from their past, which I think is what the story that you just said speaks to so beautifully.
In your experience, did you find, either in your interviews of people for the book or your own personal experience, that when you got to this place of forgiveness, that it was almost like opening up a door into a room of clarity and joy and, I'll say it, and love? Did that come up at all for you or people you talked to?
Yeah, most people talked about a huge weight being lifted off of their shoulders, of a burden of resentment, anger, and sadness of having to carry that around every single day. And and I think for a lot of people, you know, that I talk to, it's a moment that they felt that, and just feeling nothing but, you know, love for a person or a situation.
Yeah, that's incredible. You know, in this field I work in called interpersonal neurobiology, we kind of synthesize all the branches of science together into one framework. And you get these three things that come up in that hub. And there's a science possible mechanism beneath it. But the three things are love, open awareness, which you can simply call presence, and interconnection. And if we live a life when we can tap into that hub, and there's a really interesting set of things you could do, then you can see where When you live a life like that, forgiveness becomes very natural. You know, there's a story, a woman whose only son was murdered on the street. And the person who was thought to be the murderer was caught and he was convicted. And the mother said to him, you know, I'm going to kill you. And so he was terrified, but he was put in jail. And this woman, you know, after a while, started visiting this person in jail. And as the years went by and there came a time for parole, and she had been visiting him all this time, he said, I'm about to leave. And she goes, well, where are you going to go? He goes, I have nowhere to go. And she goes, well, I have a room in my house. Do you want to come live there? Wow. And the guy goes, what do you mean? And he said, you said you're going to kill me. Why would I go live in your house? She goes, I did kill you. I killed the person who was in so much pain that he would kill my son. And so this young man, leaving prison, moved in with the mother of the young man he killed.
Well, see, it's stories like that, and I'm so happy that you shared it. And there were a couple in my book that were, you know, Chris Williams, who we talked to on this podcast, actually, who befriended the young man who was a drunk driver and hit his family car and killed several members of his family. And I think a lot of people listen and they say, how is that possible? How do people get there? So I wonder, what do you say to somebody who might listen to that story specifically or another person's story and say, well, if they can forgive, how can I not forgive?
Those really distressful inner states, those emotions, those images, those memories we have, the feelings in our body, you know, if you just think about the acronym SIFT, you have sensations, images, feelings, and thoughts. And these can create resentment that are filled with really, really painful inner, you know, sensations, images, feelings, and thoughts. That's your inner state of your mind in that moment. Now, many of us are constantly having like a monkey mind. He did this, he did that, he did this. And so let's use the example of abuse. You know, someone comes in and, you know, like many of us who may experience abuse in childhood, you know, we do our best because if it's an attachment figure, you know, we've got to disconnect from the experience because abuse, whether it's physical abuse, sexual abuse, emotional abuse, or verbal abuse, all of those forms of abuse, they're really violations to a number of things that are built into our bodies that attachment figures are supposed to be a source of safety and soothing and being seen, right? So it really is a violation of all that. And then on top of those things being violated, you have the presence of physical injury or sexual arousal as a child that's inappropriate. All these things that people may feel uncomfortable talking about, but we really need to say it. Because this is what, when someone says, I can't forgive, let's take an example of someone who's been abused. So now they're having trouble with their sexual life as an adult. Their romantic relationships are challenged because this past experience is still influencing them. And so they come for therapy because you want the example of that. And now you go, well, what do? You say, well, the first step in terms of the therapeutic experience is to be present with what is, you know. Now, the word acceptance is a really tricky word because some people understandably hear the word acceptance and they very understandably interpret it as you're okay with what happened.
Right, exactly.
Right. But in the psychological research literature anyway, and the clinical literature, that is not at all what the linguistic term acceptance is trying to be used as. Not I'm validating that it was good. That's not what it means. Acceptance means that my ability to sit in awareness and perceive clearly, to sense in my body, to think a thought, to access a memory, to all this stuff, to sifting my mind, I can sift my mind and experience what actually is. That's what acceptance means. It means seeing clearly. Because if a part of your mind says, I never want to have been abused, which is understandable. Then you're not accepting that abuse happened. Let's say it did, right? Mm-hmm. So one part of your mind says, I refuse to accept that abuse happened. I'm not going to forgive like that. And you go, well, excuse me, take a deep breath. You know, acceptance doesn't mean condoning something and saying it's good. It just means I see what actually is.
We're going to take a quick break. But before we do, this podcast is produced by Headspace Studios. The Headspace app has thousands of hours of meditation, mindfulness, movement, and sleep content. The best tool you have is your mind, so take care of it. Learn more at headspace.com. One of the things I love most about talking with Dr. Siegel is that he always expands my perspective on what it means to feel hurt.
And there's a word we should just mention, which is a weird word from a scientific point of view, but it's really powerful. It's called epistemic trust. So epistemic trust is when a person in a position of authority, so it could be an attachment figure like a mother or father, could be a teacher like at school, could be the have an organization or the head of a company or the head of a country or whatever, you know, when that person in a position of authority is conveying information to you that is not consistent with reality, that's a violation of epistemic trust. And it's a deep, deep, deep violation. It isn't usually included in when we talk about abuse, but it's an abuse of a position of authority. And so now you look to what we all share as mammals and as humans is attachment. So you go, wow, you know, we are genetically programmed to turn to authority figures and hope we can rely on them. And when they betray our trust in all these different ways, physical, sexual, relational, epistemic, you know, it is huge. It's like the biggest thing ever.
That same idea came up when I talked with Chelsea Handler earlier in this series. She discussed her anger after the 2016 presidential election.
Yeah, the Trump election for sure like set me over because then I had something to be mad about. You know, then I was like, oh, I could pin it all on Trump. This is why I don't like the unjustness of this. And that was just another, you know, way to like be angry at something so I didn't look like I was crazy, like I had an object or subject to be pissed about.
I'm so glad Dr. Siegel put this feeling into words, because forgiveness can only begin when we name our hurt. But now that he points out this type of betrayal, it raises the question about how to start forgiving when we've been hurt by a system instead of an individual.
Would you say that there is a common theme between the people that you see who struggle really badly with forgiveness versus people who feel like forgiveness comes easily to them, or maybe topics that, you know, whether it's infidelity in a marriage or sexual abuse or having an addict as a parent, like, are there certain topics that you have found over the years that are harder for people to practice forgiveness with than others?
Yeah, I do think there is a common thing. It's a really interesting question you're asking, Catherine. I would say that the common ground for people who have a really hard time with forgiveness, and then meaning that their resentments still consume them, are people who haven't been given the opportunity really to distinguish. This is going to sound ridiculously simple, but they really have not been given the opportunity to distinguish the experience of being aware, like when I said, hello, Catherine, from awareness itself, the knowing from the knowns. Now, so on the surface, when you just say hello to someone or meet them or see their behavior, you would never know that's the case. But I would say that's what emerges. And the good news about that is that's a teachable skill to distinguish this, you know, in our practice, but there are lots of other ways of doing it. But to give someone the mind training practices that not only allow you to be able to forgive, meaning I And I accept that what was, and I give up all hope for a better past. So I'm really accepting that's the way it is. And I free myself from the prison of the past by forgiving in the present so I can create the future I want.
Dr. Siegel is talking in neurobiologist lingo here, but he's saying something really similar to what Devon Franklin said earlier in this season.
But for me, forgiveness is I don't replay, stop playing the events of the past to the degree that they impact my ability to live in the present.
And one of the most interesting things I learned talking to Dr. Siegel is that feeling of freedom people feel when they're finally able to forgive is actually related to our brain chemistry.
So I couldn't hate them anymore. But what I felt was what was even more beautiful. A huge luggage was lifted from my shoulders. I felt so happy. I felt like my body was floating in the air.
Practicing forgiveness can actually impact our brains and our bodies.
When you look at the, the medical benefits of, you know, developing this ability to focus your attention, there's three pillars. Focus your attention really strongly, open your awareness, and develop kindness as an intentional stance, which is love and compassion. When you do those three pillars, the research shows you're going to reduce stress, you are going to improve the way your heart communicates with your head, which optimizes all sorts of things like lowers cholesterol levels, lowers your blood pressure if it's high. You're going to reduce inflammation in your body by changing the way genes are regulated. You're going to actually improve the immune system, and you're going to raise an enzyme called telomerase to its optimal levels so that you're repairing and maintaining the ends of your chromosomes. So literally, when you develop these three things, focus, attention, open awareness, and kind intention, you optimize this enzyme that literally will slow the aging process. How about that?
Is that why people describe being able to practice forgiveness as a feeling or a sense of freedom, feeling a sense of freedom?
Absolutely. Because interestingly, and this is where it's so fascinating, the science of this, freedom is the possibility part. And this is going to sound weird. If you are holding on to resentment, there's an illusion of certainty that resentment gives you. Like, I was wronged, they did a bad thing, I'm good, they're bad. They're bad, I'm good. They're bad, I'm good. And that certainty is something, in a way, the brain really wants to have. It's like, it's a prediction machine, and when it can get some feeling of being able to predict something with certainty, it feels safe in the world. So ironically, when you realize certainty is a flimsy fantasy, then you come to realize, and here's the weird statement, that the synonym for uncertainty is freedom and possibility. My experience as a therapist has been that when people are resenting someone and don't want to forgive, it involves these deep interwoven attachment networks. So your body feels wrecked by your preoccupations with the things or the person you're resenting, right? It feels really meaningful. Right. And you're making maps of often the mind of the other person that they intended to hurt you. And interestingly, when you just sit like with the sensation of the breath, or right now I'm watching the breeze we have here in LA, you know, slowly move the leaves outside my office window, my home office window, back and forth and back and forth. When I get with the sensation of the sight of those beautiful leaves, or if I could hear them, if the windows were open, you know, just get with my hearing, those are side sensory circuits. So it turns out that they're mutually inhibitory, meaning if I can just be with sensation, I can calm my resenting, you know, others in the self circuit, calm it down. But when I get full of resentment, when I get filled with preoccupations about others, about what others think of me, and they wronged me, and oh my God, my default mode gets really active, and then I'm not in the present moment anymore, because the way you get in the present moment is you activate your side sensory circuits. Because the only time sensation happens is in the present. But your resentments happen about the past, and you're worried about the future and the past and the future and the past and the future, and you're no longer present.
So is that more, to sum that up, is that more people who are more mindful and present have a better time? I don't want to say easier time forgiving, but a better understanding of the role of forgiveness in their lives?
You know, I would love to see the formal research, you know, doing a thing where they tease it apart. My clinical intuition, not being a forgiveness researcher, but more like a clinician working with forgiveness all the time, is that the, I mean, it's interesting. I've been at a meeting on mindfulness, and there isn't, believe it or not, a shared definition yet of exactly what that means. But it does include the following things. It includes the ability to focus attention. Kindness is a fundamental part of what we mean by being mindful. Now, can you be kind and have open awareness and be having be skilled at focused attention and still be resentful? Probably, you probably could, but it probably much more likely that as you realized that resentment is just an imprisonment that is not good for anyone. And let's be really clear, when we talk about acceptance and presence and love and all that stuff, we're not saying you let social injustice happen. We're not saying if you're being mistreated, you let that continue to happen. We're not saying that, oh, if I'm in a state of forgiveness, you know, I have to stay with someone who's betrayed me, or you know, I've got to go have Thanksgiving dinner with someone who abused me and won't apologize for that. No, we're not. It's not at all. You don't have to go have Thanksgiving dinner with them. And so, you know, this is where you can forgive and choose not to have a person in your life.
That was a big part of forgiveness and in my forgiveness journey, saying, if I choose to no longer have a person in my life who caused me pain or, you know, caused me harm, if I choose to no longer have them in my life, does that actually mean that I've really forgiven them? Or does that just mean that I'm still really resentful of them, that I can't have them in my life? Having myself gone to see you and talk to you and be able to be aware of, you know, but that's really about you creating new boundaries in your life to protect your heart and your yourself and your emotions, and you still can have forgiven them 100%, but you don't have to go to lunch with them, and you don't have to,
exactly,
you know, sit at Thanksgiving dinner with them either, you know? So I think it's right, who choose to say like, I actually don't want to sit at, you know, I don't want to have Christmas with this person, or I don't want to hang around with this, you know, this person that I always used to do whatever with. And for people to see and hear that it's okay to do that, I think is a really empowering and freeing thing.
There were times while working on my book and on this podcast when my forgiveness muscle was tested. People I thought I'd already forgiven resurfaced in my thoughts and in real life to show me that I actually had more work to do. The knowledge I gained while exploring the topic of forgiveness helped me shift my perspective and broaden my understanding of how complex this topic really is. Knowing that there are so many ways to practice forgiveness has encouraged me to keep pushing forward with self-compassion and hope. It's been so inspiring for me to know that there's no right or wrong way to practice forgiveness. There's only your way. If you take nothing else from this series, I hope that you've learned that forgiveness is not one size fits all. It takes all shapes and forms. It might take a day, year, several years, or the rest of your life. And that's okay. Are there times when my past wounds might burn a little? Of course. As I said at the beginning of this series, I'm no expert on forgiveness. I've struggled with forgiveness, and I have been lucky enough to practice forgiveness in my life. But I also know that there will be times in my future when I will still struggle with forgiveness. I plan on going back to the stories from this project to help pull me through. I've learned a wide range of tools to help me when I'm struggling with forgiveness. Skills like noticing my feelings and allowing myself to experience them instead of pushing them off, and figuring out how to work our way back to a place of forgiveness.
Identifying those triggers, identifying those thoughts, and then countering them with pre-decided, pre-practiced thoughts to cut them off, to help me not go down those destructive paths.
Practicing empathy and compassion for others.
The girl that told that to the entire school was being abused. So I had compassion for her, and I tried to see her side, like why she would take such, such a secret of mine and put it out there and make it hers. You know, like I really tried to understand like why it was something that I did to her.
Visualizing light, warmth, and the greatest version of you.
I think a future self visualization daily is really powerful. I imagine in my mind my future self, my greatest self, walking up and looking at me, mm-hmm. like a mirror of myself, but the ideal image of love, the ideal image of light, of kindness, of compassion.
Another lesson I learned about forgiveness is that there's no timetable. There's no time you're supposed to have arrived there. It's important to be gentle with yourself and have self-compassion when your forgiveness journey may be taking a little bit longer than you anticipated, or if you simply just aren't ready to forgive at all.
I don't believe that I owe anybody anything at all. And so I don't make excuses for the reason why I have not. I didn't choose to forgive. It's just not on my heart right now. I certainly believe that there will come a time where I will say that I forgive the person that shot and killed my son, but I'm just not at that particular point right now.
After several years doing a deep dive on forgiveness, I have a few beliefs that work for me specifically in my own journey. I believe in forgiving and not forgetting. I never try to judge anyone for not forgiving, including myself. I know how difficult it really is and that everyone is on their own unique journey with forgiveness.
The big topic of self-forgiveness is obviously one that came up a lot when I was doing my book and also just in talking about forgiveness. And I imagine that's something that, you know, comes up a huge amount in therapy and in people's breakthroughs. And people seem to have an incredibly challenging time, if not, you know, more challenging time practicing self-forgiveness than any other type of forgiveness. Why would you say that is?
If you're an adult and not forgiving yourself for ways you might be different, you know, maybe you don't think the same way, or maybe you don't wear the same clothes, or there are lots of ways you wouldn't forgive yourself. There's also behaviors you may have done, you know, of betraying others that mm-hmm. you don't even want to think about it. So you just justify it with rationalizations that what you did was okay, or the other person made you do it, or all sorts of things that avoid saying what I did or who I am was disappointing to me, and how do I take a deep breath, let that go, and say, well, I'm going to try to do better in the future. So, you know, in terms of self-forgiveness, I also have trouble with that word self-compassion. I would like to call it inner compassion. But the idea of how can you be mindful and also be gentle and kind with yourself and realize you're part of a larger humanity, those three really great research ways of studying self-compassion.
To people who are listening to this podcast and feel like they are struggling with forgiveness, that forgiveness is, you know, not something that they could ever see themselves being able to do, what from, you know, your experience guiding people for many years and just being the amazing human that you are, what are some practical steps that you could tell people who feel like they are really struggling with forgiveness and maybe want to practice forgiveness but just don't know how? What are some steps people can take in order to start their journey?
Yeah, well, I deeply believe in the art of journaling. You know, I think it's a really powerful practice. And people like Pennebaker have shown, you know, even if you write things down and never read them, it can be a really helpful journey to start healing and integrating painful things in the past. So I would just start a little entry, you know, every evening if you can, just write about the day And if there is something you're resentful of, start just writing about it. The other thing I would do in your daily journal entries is just try to write three things you're grateful for. And, you know, research is really clear. If you can state, or especially writing down, three things you're grateful for, that's a good start. So I would start there before hitting head on the forgiveness thing. Then, once you're doing some journaling of what's going on and you're doing your gratitude journal, after a week or two of that, I would then start to write down if there's any things holding you in the past. It could be little things, a neighbor cut down my rose bush. You know, they could be huge things, you know, a parent did this or that to me, you know, or, you know, a romantic partner did this other thing to me, you know. I would write those down and don't try to change them right away. Just let yourself become aware of what that thing is, you know, and there's all sorts of practices that exist and different ones are good for different people. Some people love the wheel of awareness where they do this meditation and they would then see those things they resent as just elements on the rim. Some people love the beautiful work of Byron Katie, you know, where she has you do these four questions of, you know, what am I resentful of? Can I let it go? And I would find somebody that fits with you. So I don't think there's one size fits all, but I do think that beginning the reflective process on what you may be resentful of, and then asking questions like, is this really true? And if you say yes, it is really true, what would it be if I could live without it? And then start imagining a life. And then when you see, you say, well, I can't live without this because that person did X, Y, and Z. Then think about what Catherine and I have talked about today, that forgiveness isn't saying that what happened is good or that you need to continue even in a connection with that person. It's just really giving yourself freedom from being trapped in the past. You know, that's what I would suggest as a starting place to go.
I love that. I think it's interesting because people, I think it's just the culture that we live in. People want, you know, here are three steps on really quick forgiveness, like that people just have this mentality of wanting, you know, quick steps to something. And when people ask that, I always say, unfortunately, there are no three steps to getting to a place of forgiveness, but just being open to it and having a desire to be able to get there is a great first step.
Beautiful. Great. Well, I hope it's helpful.
Thank you so much, Dan. This was amazing. I could sit and talk to you for hours, as you know. So thank you, thank you, thank you.
Oh, you're welcome. You're welcome. You're welcome.
Thanks. Bye.
Bye.
If you've listened to this series the whole way through, I want to thank you for joining us and for your interest in the topic of forgiveness. Forgiveness is one of those words that stops people in their tracks. It carries a certain weight. It forces us to reflect on our experiences and ask ourselves uncomfortable questions. It's also one of the topics that touches each and every single one of us. No matter what our age is, our gender is, or where we come from, none of us is spared from coming face to face with forgiveness at some point in our lives. How we choose to handle that or not is totally up to us. My hope with both my book and this podcast is that these stories inspire you and make you think about the role forgiveness plays in your own life. Maybe it's not part of your life at all. Maybe you want it to be part of your life and you don't know how to get there. And maybe you've been able to practice it easily or have gone through your own challenging forgiveness journey and feel like now, years later, you're finally able to say, I have forgiven. Wherever you are in your forgiveness journey, I hope you know that you're not alone. I'm so grateful to every single person I spoke to for this series. All the people who agreed to be part of this podcast and part of my book chose to be so open and honest with their stories because they want to help you in your forgiveness journey. Hearing other people's struggles has helped me tremendously in my own life, and I hope after listening, you feel the same way. These stories were gathered and shared to help inspire you to welcome forgiveness into your life. And if you're not at a place where you feel like you can forgive, then that's okay too. My hope is that these stories also give you insight into all that we're facing in life. Life is beautiful, exciting, and challenging. If we can be more open about our journeys and struggles and offer another person a helping hand, or just go out into the world treating each other with more kindness and compassion, the world would be a much better place. I'm a different person today because of the stories that I've heard about forgiveness, and I can't wait to learn more. My hope is that if you decide to take the first step toward forgiveness, which is just being open to it being a part of your life, that you know there will be something incredible waiting for you. The gift of forgiveness. Thanks for listening, and thank you so much for spending the last few months with me. I really hope that these stories have inspired and moved you as much as they have moved me. The Headspace app has thousands of hours of mindfulness and meditation content for you, including meditations on forgiveness, grief, noting, and more. Download it today and try it for free. The Gift of Forgiveness is hosted and executive produced by me, Catherine Schwarzenegger Pratt. You can find my book, The Gift of Forgiveness, wherever books are sold. And I want to give a special thanks to everyone who helped make this show possible. This show was produced by Monique Laborde and Otis Gray. Sound design by Dan Kroll. From Headspace Studios, the executive producers are Leah Sutherland, Morgan Selzer, and Sam Rogaway. This podcast is produced in partnership with Cadence 13.